Wait for it, wait for it. Welcome to the BerlinBrigade.com podcast with your host, David Guerra.
And welcome to episode 24 of the BerlinBrigade.com podcast. I am your host, David Guerra, former member of Weapons Squad, 3rd Platoon, Alpha Company, 6th Battalion, 502nd Infantry, Berlin Brigade. I thank you for taking the time to join me today on this, the latest episode of the BerlinBrigade.com podcast, and I hope that we find you, your family, and friends all in good health. How are you enjoying the high school, college, and football season so far? It should be very interesting all around. So, hey, things are shaping up to be nice, so let's see what happens. Hey, out in our Facebook conversation, former 73rd 50th Security Police Squadron member Terry Hansen, he continues to count down the days to the start of fall. And thanks, Terry, keeping us in check, keeping us in line. You know, I'm wondering if he's going to start counting down the days to winter once fall begins. You know, I guess we'll have to wait and see later this week. In the meantime, like I said, I thank you for joining me today. So let's get this podcast started.
It's time for the special announcements!
As of this podcast recording, our registry count is just over 3,700 names. That's right, finally we crossed over the 3,700 name mark, and, well, we are well on our way to 3,800 names. Great job, everyone, and keep it up. Remember, the only way to keep it up is to sign up and get yourself out there. As always, to have your email address changed or removed from the registry, all you need to do is just to resubmit the registry form in the comments section. Please place either change of address or removal. Many of you have already done that. I continue to request that, and it's just really simple, really easy. I thank you for doing that, and again, in the future. If you have to leave us, unfortunately, there will come a time, and we'll be sad to let you go. But hey, please know that you're always welcome back. Just because your name's off the list doesn't mean you're not welcome back. So whenever you're ready, you come on back. Next, I want to invite you to check out the Daily Cold War Minute Cinchcast that has been online since the 1st of June. Now, there are over 110 episodes now online and counting, and you can check out the Cold War Minute on its new Cinchcast page at www.cinchcast.com/Cold War Minute. And you can also subscribe now on iTunes. It's there. Just do a search. If you've got iTunes, search in the store and just type in Cold War Minute, and boom, there we are, right there at the top of the list. Now, let's take a look at our email and stuff that's come in the past couple of weeks, and hopefully we can address or answer or get the ball rolling on some of these. So here we go. First one, an email comes in looking for a former member of the Berlin Brigade, and it goes like this. Hello, Berlin Brigade. I am searching for PFC Stanley Paul Langer, who was with A Company, 2nd Battle Group, 6th Infantry, U.S. Forces back in Berlin of 1960. He was friends with Gisela Bonig at that time, and she would like to contact him if at all possible. So far, I haven't seen his name listed on your website. Perhaps you have more information that can locate him. Thank you for any help you can give. But folks, if you are Stanley Paul Langer, or you know Stanley Langer from A Company, 2nd Battle Group, 6th Infantry, drop me a note, and I will put you in contact with the person sending this email. So there we go. Now let's move on to the next one. Our next email is also looking for someone, another former Berlin Brigade soldier, and it goes like this. Dear Berlin Brigade, I have been trying to find my cousin Harold Elmer Mauku for quite some time. He and I were very close friends when we were young. But after we both got married, we went in separate directions. When I got married, I got a letter from him telling me he was serving in Germany. I believe he was a captain and was in the tanker division. After a while, I heard he passed away, and I would like to reconnect with his family. Can you give me any information, or at least point me in what to do in my quest for more information about him? I thank you in advance for anything you can do for me. Well, the same here, folks. If you knew Harold Elmer Mauku, or in contact with his family, please drop me a note and I'll pass it along. Again, wow, this is going back some time. That's very interesting. The last email is looking for another former Berlin Brigade soldier, and here goes. To whom this may concern, I am trying to contact someone who served in the Berlin Brigade in 1954. I believe he was a military policeman with the first name of Hank, I think. And I think he was assigned to McNair Barracks. Is there any record of the names of U.S. servicemen serving in the brigade, particularly the MP Company during the 1954? Yearbooks, company rosters, etc. I understand he may have also served in the Honor Guard. I would greatly appreciate any help you may give. Well, to be honest, there's really not a lot to go on with the first name of Hank. As the writer knows, and all of us know, U.S. military uniforms show or bear the last name of the individual, and that's all this shows. It doesn't really show a first name, and that usually stands out more than just Hank, you know, because, again, that's how we knew each other. That's how we called each other. That's how we talked to each other, all by our last names. However, that is not to say that it's not impossible. I'm just going to say it's difficult to maybe achieve this one. So, again, if anyone out there recalls someone named Hank in 1954 in Berlin that may have been an MP, or you're a former MP that served in Berlin in 1954 by the name of Hank, please drop me a note, and I, too, will get you in contact with the person that sent the email that's looking for you. Lastly, to Jim Sicaria, thank you for your wonderful email, sir. You are very welcome, and I can tell you this has certainly been a labor of love. Before I forget, consider this a very simple reminder. If you are planning or having a reunion in the near future, please drop me a note at davidg@berlinbrigade.com to help get the word out and make your event a truly awesome and unique event.
Take your seats because it's time for a special guest interview!
Before we start the episode 24 interview, which, by the way, is a continuation of the episode 23 interview with Dan Southard, I want to take the time to thank our last guest, Ginger Giles, from the Boot Campaign, for spending time and talking to us about that wonderful program. They just officially celebrated their one-year anniversary, and they continue to be well on their way to putting boots on the feet of every citizen in the United States. I know I speak for the members of the BerlinBrigade.com community when I say we wish the Boot Campaign continued success. Now, on with part two of Dan Southard's unique interview. The interview was recorded using the TalkShoe.com service on the evening of Thursday, August 12th. This wonderful conversation was broken into two parts, and an unscheduled third part is pending, because it's still unscheduled. So, as I mentioned, our guest is Dan Southard, and he experienced quite a bit when he was assigned to the Berlin Brigade. Then again, a lot happened when he was in Berlin. So please, as always, pull up a seat, crack open a Berliner Kindle, unwrap that doner kebab, sit back, and enjoy the conversation.
Where was it, strike platoon for 3rd Battle Group? I cannot remember because I was in it very low. But Lieutenant Mentor was, again, the platoon leader. And our job was to physically take the Zehlendorf S-Bahn. Because Intel had it, and I found out later that this is true. When I was doing the book, I was talking to a KGB officer who became a fairly close friend, that the Russians were going to just load troops in the S-Bahns and the U-Bahns and run them in and try to separate the sectors so that the Americans, British, and French troops were separated from each other. Good strategy. So what we did on that particular day is we assaulted the Zehlendorf S-Bahn off. And at dark 30, we left McNair in trucks about 3 o'clock in the morning. And, all camoed up, all painted up, knives sharpened, etc. And we trucked to, I think it was near Free University, and then got out of the trucks, and we walked about a mile. And then Lieutenant Mentor, while Alpha Company dug in around the Zehlendorf S-Bahnhof, Lieutenant Mentor's platoon actually took it. Physically. We made a fixed bayonet charge and took it. Well, the S-Bahnhofs were controlled by the Soviets, and because of the Potsdam Agreement, and the Soviet soldiers, or whoever they were, armed people in civilian clothes, locked themselves in the bottom. But what we were going to do then is take a 106 recoilless rifle and point it right down the railroad track. If you go to Zehlendorf, in the old days, you look down, you had about 100 meter, 200 meter probably more than that, perfect shot at any train coming in. And a 106 hitting that engine would probably do a pretty nasty job on it. And so we had a sniper named Joe Barber. I remember his name. He was an African-American kid, very nice, hell of a shot. He and I were firing on the Berlin rifle team together. We were joking about having been in some matches not long before. Well, the Russians, if you know the East Germans and Russians, they never clean anything. They constantly paint things. And at the top of the Zehlendorf S-Bahnhof, and Nappy, I know you're supposed to be listening to this, so damn it, if I make a mistake, you call in. I gave him all the other things. Napoleon Paz, former New York Police Department. Okay, so anyway, Nappy said what happened was Joe, and I watched the whole thing. Lieutenant Mentor and I were on top of the roof. Lieutenant Mentor told Joe, take your rifle, and he had an M1D, a sniper rifle, Lieutenant Mentor said, get behind that building, and you cover that 106 recoilless rifle crew when they're setting up. So Joe did what he was told me. He jumped over the iron railing, and he turned out that red carpet that he thought he was landing on was a painted-over skylight that didn't have any glass showing at all. Joe fell three stories down to the basement and broke his neck. So now we have a casualty, and he's moaning. And so I get there and I'm looking down. I said, Joe, I'm going to get to you. He recognized me. Dan, you got to come get me. Okay, so Tony Passiola had a Browning automatic rifle. And let's see, Nappy Paz. Oh, geez, these guys. Nappy remembers all the guys up there, and I just don't. Okay, so Lieutenant Mentor says to me, Dan, he says, let's go down and talk to the Russians. See if we can just get him out so you don't have to climb down. I says, okay. And Lieutenant Mentor and I go down the stairs. We have German police there helping us. And we asked them, we said we have an American casualty. For common decency, would you let us through the door to get him? And they said, hell no, they will fire on any American coming in there. And so we could have gone in there, but Joe would have been dead. So what we did then was Lieutenant Mentor and I and Sergeant Toomey. Sergeant, now this was a different Toomey. I believe they're cousins. Sergeant Tom Toomey, he later went with Detachment A of the 10th Special Forces Group. Well, Sergeant Toomey was a platoon sergeant, and Sergeant Moon was the squad leader. So when I got up there, they had made a rope out of rifle slings, and Lieutenant Mentor said, Dan, you're going to climb down there and get Joe. He said, we're going to cover you. He said, either you're going to go or I'm going to go. I said, Lieutenant, I'm going to go. I'm the medic. So I was, understand, I was pumped up. So the hole Joe made was pretty good, but it was jagged glass, and I could see he'd been cut by the glass in addition to what I hoped wasn't a broken neck, but he was screaming, crying, but not moving a lot. I told him, don't move, Joe, don't move. And so I said to him, Joe, I says, I got to break this glass out. And I said, can you crawl a little bit out of the way? And he couldn't move at all. So I says, I don't know where I got this idea, folks. I says, Joe, I'm going to take my flak jacket off and I'm going to drop it over your face. Okay, it was a good idea. The only thing is, I was so excited, I didn't realize that I had two frag grenades and three or four smoke grenades on my flak jacket. In addition, the pockets loaded with 30-round clips of my carbine. I dropped it over Joe's face and knocked him colder than a cucumber.
Ouch.
Yes, ouch. He didn't move. I went, then Sergeant Moon started laughing at me. He said, Dan, he said, I think you just killed him. Holy shit. Okay, so then I took my carbine and I broke the rest of the glass out. So then Sergeant Toomey hooked the rifle slings down, and I climbed down, and then all of a sudden I heard a look out, swing, swing, swing. And one of the people down there, whether it was a Russian or Stasi, I don't know, was aiming a handgun at me and apparently fired a couple rounds, because we fired, I think Nappy said we fired one or two rounds at them. The guy disappeared then. Everything was quiet. But I was swinging back and forth, and the rifle slings broke, and I landed on, and this is funnier than heck. Remember how at the Espanovs they would sell strawberries and cognac from the East Zone?
Mm-hmm.
I landed on crates of strawberries and cognac, and I was covered with my own blood from the cuts and red strawberry juice. That I remember, I had a white T-shirt on in those days, and so I get down there. I get down to Joe. I take a pistol belt, put it around his neck. I see he's still alive. You put the pistol belt around his neck so that his neck is centered. It doesn't get wiggled back and forth. And then another American, I don't know who, Nappy told me the other day who it was. One of my Alpha Company buddies came down on another sling, and then all of a sudden German assault police showed up, and they had a ladder. I helped them brace the ladder, and then I covered them when they came down. Somebody threw my carbine down to me. And then they did an assault from the inside, and then they... Either the Russians or Stasi decided that they had had enough and they didn't fight. Now, all this is taking time. By that time, remember, the Zeiss Econ factory was right up the street from the Zehlendorf Espanov, and it still is, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
And you've probably seen it 1,000 times. Well, in those days, they used to have an awful lot of girls employed by them. Now this story gets good here. So what happens is that I have to wait with Joe Barber until the Germans clear everything. We get an ambulance down there, get his litter, we put him on the litter, and I had to gather all my stuff, so I'm the last person coming out of the place. At that time, I'm carrying my flat jacket. I have a T-shirt covered with blood and strawberry juice. I'm trying to bandage myself up. I go out there, Lieutenant Menner's walking with me, and there's all these beautiful girls lining the streets, and a huge cheer goes up. And I'm looking out, Lieutenant Manor says, "Dan," he said, "they're all cheering you." And I'm telling you what, no, don't think me of a bad person, but girls were throwing me their addresses and phone numbers. You know, that's terrible. I could only collect 30 or 40 of them before I got back to the Jeep. But that's funny, you know. Sometimes there are a reward to being a little bit of a to fall into being a little bit of a hero for a second. So anyway, so that was another incident that happened in Berlin. So
wow. So when did you leave Berlin? I'm kind of fast forwarding your move here a little bit.
Okay, I left Berlin in August of what I did is I reenlisted in the army, and I actually reenlisted to go to a new place called Vietnam. And I didn't want to be in Berlin anymore. I had, after a while, and with that wall up, and we just got claustrophobia, because there were lots of restrictions on us at that time that probably weren't on you guys. You can only be out so many times during a month and things like that. And so I actually enlisted for there, and then I was in Saigon for 3 weeks, and First Sergeant came in and said, "Dan, there's a problem with your enlistment." In the meantime, I had been accepted at the University of Arizona, and he said, "There's a problem with your reenlistment," and he said, "You've got to reenlist." I said, "Well, what if I don't?" He said, "You'll be in the next plane out of here." And so I said, "Sarge, I'm going to go to college." And so I left I left Saigon, free trip back, and then I majored in Asian studies when I was in college. So, but anyway, so I had my very first enlistment then was quite exciting.
Yeah, I would say so. Definitely. Way to get your feet wet, without a doubt. So after that, I mean, you did your time in Vietnam. You went to school, and... Well, what happened after that? Just kind of bring us up to today, and then we'll go back a little bit in time.
Okay. Well, I majored in Asian studies at the University of Arizona, and then I wrestled at the U of A. I was a pretty good athlete. I did Shotokan karate. I was head of the Shotokan Karate Association. I trained with Shojiro Koyama, Hidetaka Nishiyama, and Mr. Oshima. Yeah, I fought actually in 1965 at the Nisei Week matches. I took Koyasan Temple in Los Angeles. I actually fought against Chuck Norris in the semifinals, and he beat me by half point. Now, at the time, we were both college students. He was going to, I'm going to say Cal Santa Barbara, but it could have been a different school, and I was University of Arizona. And then I wanted to go to Vietnam. I re-enlisted in the Army Reserve, but I had a professor, Dr. James Downs, who got me in the civilian capacity because of my degree, and then came back, and then decided I'd been a wrestler at the U of A and had played a little bit of football, so I then went back for my master's degree, met my wife, and decided to be a coach, and went to actually inner city high school, or middle school in Bakersfield, California, and then left there and then went back for a year from the Army Reserve, but just on, I was in marksmanship my entire life in whatever unit I was in. So what I did, I went to Fort Ord and just helped clean rifles and do marksmanship instruction. Came back, went to Northern Arizona University as the head wrestling coach at NAU, and then I enlisted in the, or re-enlisted for 19th Special Forces Group, so I stayed with 19th Group for 6 years. I went on individual deployments a bunch of times, like we all did, and then ended up doing some more active duty, and then ended up at Fort Huachuca, Arizona, and decided this was a nice community, and I stayed with the 840th Armor as a Scout Platoon Sergeant, and then Chief Marksmanship Instructor, and then ended up working with Colonel Barbara DePasque with an Army School Unit where I did nothing for 3 years but travel around and teach marksmanship all over the Army. I fired at the all-Army level in matches with combat rifle, light machine gun, and handgun. I made the all-Army level 9 times, and that's then I was also head wrestling coach at Buena High School, a school in a military community, and then retired from both those, and now I'm working with a man named Masad Ayoub, who I believe is listening to this podcast, and he's written hundreds of books on guns and teaches, taught for many years at the Lethal Force Institute, and now he has his own organization, and what I do now is I teach firearms, and lately, for the last year, I've been giving free classes, very, very advanced, intensive classes, to military and police. 2 weeks ago, I had 11 police agencies in a two-day class. And then, and I know some other people are listening right now at the Firearms Academy of Seattle. Marty Hayes and all the officers up there are listening to the podcast, and so I'll be training with them for several days, and so that's what I'm doing now. I've stayed in. I got to lose about 20 pounds, but I'll do that real quick here. So, I don't see any reason to retire. I'm doing what I did in the Army, which is teaching people how to shoot. You know, I stopped being a medic after Berlin. I had some incidents that happened, Dave, that I think I've told you about, that I'm not comfortable talking about on the radio right now.
That is fine, sir. That is absolutely fine.
And I think I have told you personally about them.
You alluded to it. You kind of got to the surface. You didn't go into details. And, sir, that is on your own. If and when you're ready to talk, I'm here to listen. So don't worry about that.
Yeah. Nappy Paz and Ted Ellis and Ed Norkaitis were, and Bernd Backhaus and Eberhard Eichler were guys I've all made contact with. And they were at all of the incidents. And I will say one thing. My first day as a medic with Alpha Company, I actually was jeeped out to the company. And we were training with British soldiers. And we had an incident where a British soldier fell off of a M48 tank on a cobblestone street. You know how at the Grunewald, how the cobblestone streets would come right up to the forest?
Mm-hmm.
And it was a rainy day, and he fell off, and the tank ran over his legs. And so I tried to do the very best I could. But that was my first day as a medic, and I told Captain Nunn later on, a year or so later, I says, gee whiz, you know, when I get out of here, I'm going to re-enlist for, I'll be a cook before I'll be a medic again. I just felt the Army, I did the best I could, but, you know, it was just a situation that I wish somebody else would have been in, more competent maybe than me.
Mm-hmm.
But you got to do the best you can, and Nappy and all the guys are telling me to get my head out of my butt and quit worrying about it. They felt confident with me. So if they did, you know, and my buddies are my buddies. They, you know, nobody says anything but thanks. So that's as close as I can get.
Gotcha. And yeah. Yep, I think we all of us carry it. Maybe that one event, that one time, that one incident that, you know, that's just part of us, and we'll never, you know, it'll never see the light of day. And if it does see the light of day, it'll only be with just a select few, and it's understandable. That's just something that I guess at one point or other happens to us to some degree. And that's cool. It's all good. It's all good. Because it makes us who we are, and it makes us better people for it, too, I'd like to think.
I think it does.
Yeah. You mentioned you're doing a little firearms and stuff, and you mentioned you're doing stuff at Fort Huachuca, and you're doing stuff at Fort Bliss as well?
Well, what we're doing is that in Texas, we're working with we're setting things up with a fellow named Erwin Bayarta, who is he was the chief DPS instructor for Texas DPS for years.
Mm-hmm.
And I've joined with him, and we've really put this course together. And one of the things I'll be doing up in Seattle for the next couple of days is really cementing a intensive 2 to 3 day course that we'll give to police and military. And we're going to offer it, of course, at Huachuca. We're doing the risk assessment right now. And then Bliss, Kathy, well, I won't say her name. She's a colonel there. And then Bayarta is, of course, the person at Hood. And then we'll work through maybe the Austin Police Department and a few others. I mean, we want to get some training down here, is going in really intensive training as fast as we can.
Wow.
In fact, I just got off the phone with two NCOs here at Fort Huachuca who've signed up. And so we'll be looking at getting everything going again in the September-October time frame.
Wow. Awesome. Well, yeah, keep us informed. Keep us informed. And that's,
you know what
that's
call my organization?
I know it. Why don't you tell everybody what it's called?
Okay, Gator Farm Tactical Applications. Now, in the old days, the 6th Infantry has an alligator on the unit crest. And so McNair Barracks was known as the Gator Farm. And so what I did is I had to come up with a name. I said, well, heck, I'm just going to sort of honor all of my friends here. And so I named it Gator Farm Tactical Applications. Well, I didn't do it myself. I bounced it off of all the guys who were there when I was there. And they said, hell, go for it. If anybody asks you, start telling war stories. So I do.
Wow.
You can get it online, GatorFarmTactical.com, if you want to.
There you go. Yeah, we'll definitely put it up there on the links page.
Oh, please,
we'll get your pictures. Dan sent over the past couple of days, he finally got his scanner working, so he's got some images, and he sent some over, and they're awesome. And so we're going to get those up on the gallery page here real soon for Dan, and so be on the lookout for that in the coming changes. And actually, more than likely, as you're listening to the replay podcast, folks, the images should already be online, so again, be sure you check them out. We're talking to Dan Southard. He was there the day it went up. He was there during the heady days immediately thereafter and for a little while after the Berlin Wall went up. And he's been sharing some awesome, awesome stories, awesome times. I wouldn't want to be there at that time, but I'm more sure Dan didn't want to be there at that time, but he Wow, what an experience. And so, Dan, I thank you for joining us. And we're not done yet. We still have a little bit more to go.
Okay.
and it's the standard question we ask everybody that's on the BerlinBrigade.com podcast.
Okay.
Where were you and what were you doing the day the wall fell down? November 9th?
I was so affected. I was glued in front of my TV set. And every emotion I had just fell through me, David. I tried to make contact with my German friends, Bernd and Eberhard, who were there, and it was something. Even now, the emotions were so heavy. The incident I told you about, the flashing. When the young girl who I'd gone out with to the zoo the week before, I was wondering what kind of life she had had. That little girl who I told you about, I wonder what her family was going through, and I just it was just an unbelievable experience that for those, and I'm sure. Everybody who was there, I'm not trying to say that the guys who were there when the wall went up are any braver than anybody else. The threat of the Soviets were there all the time, and the emotions were there with everybody. But I think that when that wall came down, that those of us who were there were just, our hearts were in our throats, because it was a dream. And you didn't think that something like that could happen, and it happened. It was like, my God! It's one German lady who keeps giving me hugs when she sees me in Safeway. She was in East Germany at the time, and she says I was one of, and you too. We were the people who saved them, and so she, her life, how her life changed. Now she's married to an Army master sergeant and has a bunch of kids who play American football. You know, how lives change and how that entire... See, I think that Walter Ulbricht and Erich Honecker should be up for war crimes trials, or even posthumously. I think they were criminals. And how they got out of it, I don't know. And you know, if that book of mine ever gets published, and I've got a lot of support in that, and I make money, I'm gonna just absolutely campaign for that. I am livid that these people who murdered at least 1,500 human beings basically got away with it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so that's just my feelings. But anyway, as I was watching that TV, I my wife will tell you I couldn't even talk at times. I was just speechless. I just couldn't believe it. So, that's what I was doing.
Wow. You can't argue with that. They did. They got away with it. Well,
yeah.
Up till now. They got away with it up till now. Hey, a little bit about the book, if you don't mind, just real quick, telling us the book you've been working on, and now you've been working on it for quite a while, and now it's going into a rewrite.
Yeah, now I finished it. Well, there's two of them. Ivory Moon, that is a current story of American Special Forces, including the Navy, in West Africa going against Al-Qaeda. And remember, the Navy liked it so well that they gave me 17 days at their expense on the aircraft carrier. Well, and Gary Shrout, who's the officer who in Hollywood, he's listening to our podcast right now. He can call in, and he gave me a bunch of days of research there. And then the other one that I'm working on that has been hard, actually, is taking place through the eyes of three people. It's an intertwining story. But basically, during when the wall goes up, and it's through the eyes of an American NCO who is wrapped up in assisting good guys get out of Berlin in that situation. So I'm getting writing again, and I took some time off doing my shooting stuff and being head wrestling coach at Buena High School in Sierra Vista, Arizona, and we had a 17-1 season, and Emilio Gonzalez won the state championship and is now wrestling in Iowa and at a university there, and so that was the time for me to retire from coaching and get back to doing what I love, which is basically teaching people how to shoot. How's that sound? And now I'm writing again.
Well, there you go. Good job. Good job, man. Yeah, look forward to it. Definitely look forward to it. A lot of writers out there. A lot of writers, and that's really cool. Yeah.
There are. And in this book, I've included a number of the incidences that happened to me that I witnessed. It's easier writing through them, writing about them in fiction than it is in person.
Oh yeah.
Sometimes it was easier for me.
Because you know there'll always be somebody that'll go, no, that's not the way it happened.
Yeah.
And it's like, at least with fiction, you can take that liberty.
Yeah.
Because that's the way it happened.
Yeah.
And it's fiction. I mean, that's cool. Well, we're excited. I'm excited. I'm eager to see what comes out of this one. This should be pretty cool.
And should be good. Did I send you the first draft of that?
Yes, sir. You did a long time ago.
Yeah. Well, we'll get going. In the next 6 months, we'll finish, do a complete rewrite and finish it. So,
sweet.
I won't tell you what happens because one of the characters who turns out to be a double agent, and I didn't send you that part where that's exposed yet.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're going to be shocked.
Hey, you know, what's a good story? What's a good story, especially about Berlin, if there isn't at least one double agent?
Oh, we were full of it. You know, the lieutenant, I have so many more incidents that happened. Lieutenant Mentor probably could have thrown me in jail 10 times if he wanted to. But I only saved his life once and saved a bunch of other people. And one thing I didn't tell you, and I am bragging on this a little bit. As I was nearing the end of my career in Berlin, Colonel Hyman had me come to battalion headquarters, or battle group headquarters, where Colonel Winder was there. And I was given a direct enlisted appointment to West Point. But I had already re-enlisted. And then, so they wanted me to do a year of that enlistment and then reapply for the next class. And so, but when my enlistment was screwed up, they'd made a mistake. I had a chance to come home. I had been accepted at the University of Arizona. And so what I'm saying is that I must have been a pretty decent soldier to get something like that from officers like that.
Right, right.
You know? So.
Okay. Wow. Well, listen, I'm afraid we're going to have to break this one up into two different interviews because, man, you've got a lot more to talk about, that's for sure.
I do. There were a number of other incidents that I'm thinking about now. And of course, as soon as we hang up, Nappy Paz will email me or Facebook me and say, why don't you tell about this? Why don't you tell about that? Why don't you tell about this? You know? I tell him, you get on there. And he doesn't want to. So anyway, he said, Dan, you were in charge of this. I wasn't in charge of anything. Lieutenant Metter and Sergeant Toomey were in charge of us, and Captain Nunn. You know what? We had great officers. Lieutenant Schwarzkopf, Captain Nunn, Lieutenant Mentor, Lieutenant Jablowski, Sergeant Toomey, Sergeant Moon. We had a mini Berlin reunion of the Berlin Veterans Association 10 years ago, and the sergeant major of the second battle group was there. And I was working with his son-in-law at the time at the school I was at. But he went through a list of the people who were in Berlin when the wall went up. And I'm telling you, for any Russians or any Soviets who are listening right now, people can gloat. Berlin would not have fallen easy. We were ready to die. And we were very proud to be American soldiers.
Yeah, definitely. And that transcends from day one to the very last day there in 1994, I think we all shared that same commitment level of commitment and professionalism, that we were there to do a job, we were there to do a mission, we were actually there because it was our lives and we had to do what we had to do.
Absolutely. When I talk to young soldiers or the guys who were in the Berlin U.S. Veterans Association and they're from the later days of you, the thing that we share, every one of us share, is mission. Mm-hmm. Mission. And you know what? We were there to do it and we did it. You know, the Army has got to be proud of us.
Yeah, there was only one Berlin Brigade.
There was only one. And, you know, Lieutenant Schwarzkopf, or I'm sorry, General Schwarzkopf, put in his, if you read his autobiography, you know, he has that chapter that he flat says the best unit he ever served in and the best unit, in his opinion, the Army ever had was a Berlin Brigade. And I was with some good units, and I'm going to another reunion from another unit soon, and I love them, but they weren't the equal. You know,
yeah.
And that, see, I don't see that as putting anybody down. You know, because the Berlin Brigade was one of those very special units in the history of the United States Army, and that's just how it goes.
Mhm. Yep, without a doubt. And sir, look, unfortunately, on that note, I'm afraid I'm going to have to go ahead and bring this interview to a close. It's been awesome, and I hate doing it, but we got to do it. But you know what? We have to reschedule a second part.
Okay, we'll do that. I'll get back from Seattle the end of next week, and we can reschedule.
Yeah,
and in the meantime, I'm going to jump on some of these other guys to come in too.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely want to. Oh, well, we got somebody just popped in. I don't know if the name rings a bell. Tropical Sun? No? Does it ring a bell to you there, Dan?
No.
Okay. Not too sure. They just logged into the chat room. And that's what makes this really unique and interactive is that ability to pop into the chat room and just listen to the conversation and then not say anything, and then, you know, they pop right back out. And that's all right. So wherever you are, Tropical Sun, welcome aboard. Unfortunately, you caught us near the tail end of this awesome interview with Dan Feather, but that's okay. You can always go to BerlinBrigade.com, check out the podcast section. It'll be there. And we've been talking to Dan Southard. And Dan, I thank you for your time. Thank you for everything and sharing with us your unique experience there in Berlin and your experiences after Berlin and what's going on in your world today. Pretty cool. A lot of cool stuff. Thank you, sir.
Good. Thank you.
Again, I want to thank Dan Southard for taking the time to join us and share his memories of Berlin during those early days of the Berlin Wall. If you or someone you know has something to share with us, and I know you do, please drop me a note at davidg@berlinbrigade.com, and we'll set up a date and a time for the interview, and before you know it, you're on the show. Listen, hey, we're at the point of the podcast where it's time to wrap up episode 24. You know, we hate to do it, but we got to do it. And remember, you can always send me comments, questions, concerns, show ideas, anything to davidg@berlinbrigade.com, and we'll get right on it. So again, thank you very much. I also want to invite you to stay up to date with the latest at berlinbrigade.com by following us on Twitter at www.twitter.com/berlinbrigade, all one word. Also, be sure to check out the BerlinBrigade.com Cinchcast at www.cinchcast.com/BerlinBrigade for quick site updates and other information. But that is not all. You can also join the BerlinBrigade.com on MySpace, or you can do what over 930 of our fellow Berlin Brigade members and supporters have done, and that is to join us on the BerlinBrigade.com fan page on Facebook by following the link on the BerlinBrigade.com homepage. All of us invite you to come and join all the great Facebook conversations like those that Jim Sicaria, Cliff Brownlee, Gabby Nagel, Will Ernie, and Jackie Dunn are having. They're just a few. So if it's great Berlin Brigade conversation that you are after or you've been lacking all these years, then come on over and join our conversation. This is it for the 24th edition of the BerlinBrigade.com podcast. I am your host, Dave Guerra, and we continue our quests for our never-ending quest for the key to the clock tower. So if you have it, please let me know. And until next time, I thank you for listening. please stay safe.
Sergeant Major, dismiss the brigade! The BerlinBrigade.com podcast is a Dave Gehrer production. Thank you.
Hey, Dave Gehrer here, and if you made it this far into the podcast, I thank you. This little extra section is just to let you know that as the holidays are approaching, I want to do a little something special for you, just for you. This year, the BerlinBrigade.com Christmas card will be in limited production. And if you would like to receive the official 2010 BerlinBrigade.com Christmas card, please send me an email with your name and mailing address, and you'll be on the Christmas card list. My email address is davidg@berlinbrigade.com. Again, davidg@berlinbrigade.com. Please have your mailing address in by 11:59 p.m. on Saturday, November 20th, 2010. That way, you get your card in plenty of time for Christmas. Again, thanks a lot. Take it easy. Talk to you soon.